Radio Arts Catalyst. Sonic inquiries into art and research.
You're listening to a Radio Arts Catalyst audio production. Radio Arts Catalyst is a virtual space for collective conversations, creative expression, and alternative ways of organising. Through the radio, we're embarking on a journey into what radical spaces for individual and collective voices might look like today, and the potential of broadcasting as an ecology of overlapping spaces for listening, mapping, and transmitting. If you enjoy this broadcast, then please consider leaving us a rating or a comment. This episode forms one in a series produced as part of a residency programme that supports early career artists to expand their practices into sound and broadcasting.
Welcome to Becoming Forest Radio, made by Tae Yo-hae, Young-suk Choi, and Kwong Pam. Becoming Forest is a community-orientated healing project looking into mental health as a collective responsibility. Especially within diaspora communities, a person's emotional mental struggles are often caused by structural problems rather than individual issues. We have been facilitating the forest walk and creative season engagement as ways of acknowledging common pain points and healing together. This series of radio production is a part of this endeavor and intends to create a dedicated sonic space for East and Southeast Asian diaspora communities. This is the summer episode. In this episode, we focus on the complexity of Hong Kong diaspora. Considering the socio-political turmoil in Hong Kong, the conversations can get quite heavy and emotional. So, instead of formal interviews or discussion, we decided to gather up our stories casually over a hot pot dinner. Yes, hot pot. Apologies in advance for the mouth-watering sounds if you are hungry and listening to this. Come to join our kitchen.
We wanted the Becoming Forest summer episode to be reflective of the conversations we have as diaspora of the UK, and our questions around what it means to be at home and away from home, our definitions of home. This especially invokes Tae's statement about being in the liminal space. The construction of this episode is mainly anchored around a conversation we, myself and Breakwater, had with our guests Bettina, Yinlo and Yali. A lot of it is not linear, some of it has been edited. And in some ways, the conversation was static. We sat down to a hot pot meal to discuss topics that concerned us that day. The podcast format is linear. You play from the beginning and you stop at the end. So sonically, we wanted to guide you through Hong Kong. So all the sounds you hear are from there. The tweeting birds, rustling bamboo leaves, chirping crickets, buzzing cicadas, ripples of the perfume coast. Contrasted with the human and industrial sounds, such as aeroplanes taking off over the city or crowd noise at peak. We wanted this to be a practice where you are taken on this walk, and we encourage you to go out and find your nearest patch of nature. For you to listen to this piece and for the sounds in the environment to blur those coming out of your headphones. In doing so, we hope that you as the listener are occupying and shifting between multiple sonic spaces, as there are multiple realities of sounds. Many of the sounds that have been curated will overlap each other. They will come from different parts of your listening device, but also each person processes these sounds differently. There is no one way in which this piece should sound, but many different actualities. Much like artists in this episode and how they grapple with the daily reality or their relationship to Hong Kong.
We'd like to send our warm gratitude to the Hong Kong diasporic artists who came to the hot pot dinner. Thank you, Bettina Fong, Yali Allison, and In Lo for bringing delicious ingredients we all shared with joy and the beautiful personal stories that speak to many. In also reads an extract from her writing, Take Care of Yourself, in a bilingual anthology, Writing in Difficult Times, published in 2021. In the same year, a multidisciplinary artist duo, Gosten Jung, produced a performance, Radio Neighborhood, based on the history of postcolonial trauma in Hong Kong. The sound piece Gosten Jung contributes here is part of this performance. You will pick it up as the first thing from this episode, like a cherry on top, and it truly is. Enough of the intro, now please sit back and enjoy.
Aliens don't eat.
We acquire chlorophylls in our metabolic system. We generate energy by migrating into the sun.
So you are a plant?
Not exactly.
You know we eat plants, right?
We survive with the plants. The plants gain host from us and we help them propagate. Meanwhile, we save the time of eating to perform tasks that advance our civilization. We have clear priorities and we have figured out methods to achieve them.
Sounds very convenient. At the same time, quite sad.
Why?
Cooking and eating is one of the greatest joy in life, at least for me. Through cooking, I find who I am and where I belong. I also get to chat with friends about how we make the same dish differently. When we gather around the table and start eating, that could really make my day. I never really enjoyed cooking when I was back home. After I've arrived here, I started to spend more time on picking the right ingredients, choosing the right pots and pans, reading the recipes carefully. All of these just to recreate the taste I like, the taste that reminds me of home.
Do you miss home, then?
It's not about if I miss home or not. It's about how home lives in me.
Why is it called Barbie Lo? Which is like hitting next to the stone.
Yeah.
Stone.
Yeah.
Next straight translation.
Yeah,
hot
point.
The time we say hot point is dabino, which is hitting. Bean is on the side.
Yeah.
And then
oh.
Stone.
Is that
probably
that's
just hitting.
Yeah.
It's interesting because dabino is a Chinese dish in Vietnam.
That's
all the innards, the internal organs of an animal put into a pot.
Oh,
as a dish. When you said that, I was like, came straight to my head.
Is it like a special food, hot pot? Do you have it in a special day?
No.
Or is it every day?
I think there's a difference between, I think in the diaspora it's a special occasion, but back at home it's an everyday occasion to meet friends. And
I think from my family, it's like, that's what we have for Christmas.
Christmas?
Wow.
Yeah. I think for Christmas as well.
Oh,
no.
Reunion New Year.
Yeah.
Oh.
But not the reunion dinner.
Mm.
It would be like something else. Yeah.
But you can imagine 2-3 people sitting around the hot pot.
Yeah.
You know, the variety of food is not going to be as good as this.
You can't eat as many things.
Yeah.
Right?
When me and Hannah did it, we had to do this in hot pot 3 days running. We had to do it 3 days in a row.
That's what we do, that's why.
Oh.
Because you buy so many you buy so many things.
Exactly.
Because like, you buy mushrooms and you have to eat it. And the best thing is you have to keep continuously eating.
Do you keep the broth so it has like all the
flavours? Most times we have like a master broth.
And you should be like this, go back to Hong Kong every year around the similar time.
The sesame?
Mm.
Everything.
I realize, I mean, if I go back too frequently, I can't make here home. It's really like, I know I'm gonna go home.
Yeah.
And then you kind of like make the presence, and this is my presence.
This
is where I live in.
Yeah.
So I feel like, okay, maybe I spend more time here, like how do you develop a relationship with the city? So it's like thinking of the visit every year.
Yeah.
But also, I have my publishing in Asia, so it kind of like, okay, if I need to go, I'll still need to go. I wouldn't be able to finish another one in a year, so. Yeah, I think the physical presence is really important to because it's my natural So for me, after 2 years not in Hong Kong, it just feels much more disconnected. And also, I think after the 2019 demonstration, it just feels like my experience is very different from the people who live in Hong Kong and experience all that and the trauma and stuff. And I just feel like I don't have that kind of Hong Kong experience anymore. And yeah, so that was what we were talking about earlier. This drawing of like sort of a floor plan came up and kind of made me wondering, what do we mean by home? Do we mean by home outside of house? Or do we mean by home that we feel quite comfortable and private inside of the house? But then if the home is not about the relationship outside of home, maybe it's okay to let go of it, you know, they kind of made me think about that.
It depends how you define it. I think for many people, the people that they love is around them, and it's more than just a concrete city. So it wouldn't be like, oh, I love the concrete, I will call this home, but more like, I love the people I want to be. And that's more the access.
No, I thought it was really nice and down here. So you kind of see the ghosts here and there, and then people are hanging out in the garden, and kind of, okay, this could be the little pockets of the connection could be home too.
What's your do you have like a definition
of home? Yes, I'm constantly struggling to see the end point. I don't feel that it's the end point that I'm searching for. It's more about letting go of the definition I had last year, but then accepting the new one for the next.
What was it last year?
To me, it was place and survivor. There where you are struggling. So where is your struggle?
It's like a haven.
Also, that's what I mean by I feel now less connected to Korea, because their struggle is different from our struggle now. And struggle is a form of making a knowledge in a way. You only make a learning because you struggle. If you didn't struggle, then you don't even learn. And I'm learning in the context of here. So I guess, that was my last year. But then I want to go on a most places you feel relatable and comfortable to invite to that vulnerability, I guess.
now is a good degree.
8 degrees to 10, 20. So basically, not really cold.
Not really cold. But
I mean,
8 degrees is quite hot.
Yes, I've got some. Yeah.
Yeah.
But summer is very hot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Going back to, or like in Cantonese, fan mode. Like sometimes in conversations, like my parents will say, or they fan home, but when we turn, we go back to Hong Kong when we're talking about we're going to visit, or we're going to go there for like a short time to see family, but they will use the verb to return, to go back. Whereas I sort of noticed that, and I think I. This was like a few years ago. I struggled with like, am I going back or am I visiting? So I'm staying at someone else's house. And it's not. Yeah. And I think it's more that, because I think I noticed you said go back to Korea as well when you were talking. And I find that, like, maybe deep down inside it, there's this like returning, because we somewhere that we left, so we're going to return and visit, even though we don't live there.
Going back to Hong Kong, like Wednesday we had a chat. Over the lunch at the city block. John mentioned, John used a very kind of a strong expression about Hong Kong. He called it the dead body of Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
What context did he say that?
He said, if someone gives me, you know, free air ticket to Tokyo and Hong Kong, I'll choose Tokyo one. But I always,
yeah.
But at the same time, I'll always identify myself as Hong Kong. But the Hong Kong that is current now is not his own. And it's more like that for the Hong Kong. Yeah.
It's really difficult now since the national security law is is enforced. I think people didn't want to risk anything at the moment. You know, like usually there's a period of time that you have to like be really careful when, especially when it's first introduced to Hong Kong overseas, and then like they are charging people of. Like something to do with national security.
Yeah.
I don't even know like how that can happen.
Yeah,
or, like, and is there like a fake charge on it? Yeah. And I don't think people want to risk anything at the moment. So people are kind of quite quiet and just keep doing the things that they are doing. Things that they enjoy just to get through their things.
Yeah. People leaving.
If they can or if they want, and for those who stay, they still want to do the things they are doing, like the cultural sectors and stuff, but they don't want to be too high profile at the same time. So just keep their head low and moving. That's why. Because for me, it's ding-dong.
Yeah, ding-dong. I think they
understand. Do
you know dong I mean in Korea? Yeah, yeah. So,
oh,
Japanese, Korean, Korean. So whatever you say ding-dong, you
because, yeah, it might be 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
Or everyone has a Chinese name.
Wow.
And that's how, like, my attachment was to that.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then, like, I think later, when did they change to Doraemon? Like, 2000?
Is it?
Like,
I don't know.
Or,
but is it related to
I think when
China?
The author, before he passed away, he said he wanted, like, the name United. So that's why, since then, the name came from Ding Dong to Doraemon.
Ding dong is like the bell. Yeah. Oh, right. It's not even ding dong ding dong.
It's the sound of it.
It's the
wrong sound.
Okay,
I respect that
more.
Easier.
Is this
the sound
of someone's voice?
Change the name. So true.
What's
the
terrible direct translate?
Yeah, what was it called? I think it's a lie. Something
the Kabukara.
What?
Pa
pa pa.
Yeah, but because they don't want to use the foreign language.
Yeah.
More of the
centralizing
localization.
Yeah, as well. If you don't have the Chinese name, it's like you can't vote.
Because North Korea does that, but North Korean translation of the foreign language is actually fantastic. Very likely as well. So, for example, ice cream is the North Korean is something like icy club.
Wow.
That's
custom.
Icy club.
Icy cloud.
Cloud.
아니 근데 아이스크림은 얼음 과자.
얼음
보송. 얼음 보송.
Someone was telling me in Vietnam if you want to go into the foreign ministry, you choose a student like a country, and North Korea, South Korea are one, but you have to pass the North Korean language test.
Mm.
Because a lot of South Korean words can be figured out. They borrow English words.
Wow.
So if you understand North Korean, you switch to South Korean easier rather than the other way around, which is fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, I love North Korean translation for you. Really nice.
In Cantonese, do you have this where there's an exception taken to people who like to use that foreign name, even though there's a direct translation for them in Cantonese?
Mm-hmm.
You mean using the actual foreign word instead of
the local word?
Local
yeah.
word.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
I think in Hong Kong people tend to switch to do like Chinese language. It's in English. Some brands, because they're localistic and it's actually really quite well. They have a nice translated name, so people use it because it's memorable, it's easy to remember, and then it's kind of connected to the product they sell as well. So the translation bit is actually quite strong in Hong Kong. I mean, back in the days, I don't know if it's really strong. Like, you know, if you know the brand for baked beans, like Smedley, so the can is actually quite nice because it's like, it's sweet taste. So that's the name, and then you remember it easily, because and then you know that it's selling food because of the name. You never remember the original name, but then you remember the translated one because they did work to make a nice name to localize the product.
Campbell's soup becomes golden.
Treasure.
Golden.
So it's like you open a can because it's
golden
treasure.
I'm watching this rap TV show in Vietnam. and it's a reality TV show. And especially if you're like a rapper, who uses words for, and rappers, like, they have the least rules, I guess. They break the least rules. But what I find fascinating is, so if you get like Western rap culture, like grime, or hip-hop has its own language. It creates its own language, its own slang. That's part of its like subculture. In Vietnam, they don't really do this. They still speak standard Vietnamese. There's no slang, there's no swearing, there's no profanity. Which is like, I'm fascinated by this. But what they do is they would take words that are easily translatable in Vietnamese, but then they would use the English translation as that coolness. That subculture. So for instance, they'll be, to describe something, they'll use the word flashy to show off, right? But there's a word to show off, to be flashy, to be like, open in the world. In Vietnamese, like, it exists. But they like to use this to like to litter the language with like this I guess like Westernness, which I find sometimes infuriating because I'm just saying a bit of these words.
That's
like,
resonating to Korean artists a lot too.
But not just artists, but I find that with like even young people as well, they tend to start using it. It's just sometimes when following a conversation where every third word is English, that can get quite busy. And then not only that, it then slightly alters the meaning. The meaning is shifted a little bit. A little bit. You're like, oh. I'm not sure you can use it in that context, but it's been adopted. So it moves so fast. And it's, for me, it's disorienting. I'm still learning. And then after that,
and now it's kind of certain, so should we just stop doing things?
It's also creating
stop doing
the fear.
Making political sensitive work. I think this is what has changed.
What's the limit?
Don't know.
That's because you don't know the limit.
Yeah.
You just rather, I guess, if you do it, you kind of contest it. But then, because whether you cross it, then it might be quite severe.
That's why people don't want to test the water. What if it's boiling hot?
How much of the conversation could be recorded and then not be harmful? like in 5 years? It's like, it's so hard. Like, whatever
That's one of the things, like, in my work last, like, during the protest, and then me and Yin was like, how much can we safely put in while the exhibition could go on in Hong Kong during and after the protest? And then we decided not to put so much of the, like, China criticism.
Mm. Is it because of the civil rebellions?
Yeah, we didn't know what would happen after. Mm. And then also, like, it's funded by the government, so we're not sure. But then on the other end, we're like, I don't want to be censored as well. So what's the balance?
Do the other curators or institutions kind of give you a guideline?
No, we work on it. Yeah, I mean, it's free, but when you witness the climate, like, on the TV and news, it's like you don't know when would that hit you. But I don't know. Like, I think there was a lot of uncertainty about that.
Yeah.
Not great, because
yeah.
I have a really up and down relationship with Hong Kong, from like just wanting to go back as a child, thinking like, oh, there's nothing cool here in the UK, to just like, I don't understand Hong Kong at all. I don't fit in there. People don't understand what I'm saying. That kind of like teenage angsty period. Mm. Just like not knowing this. But each time I visit, it's different. Like all the places I remember are turned into something else. And then all the memories are more just memories. There are no physical kind of record of those things. And I didn't really have much friends until I was reunited with my childhood friend, and then suddenly that opened up Hong Kong for me. That's like 20
childhood friend
something.
In Hong Kong?
Yeah, like the friend I met in like kindergarten until I left. And then we used to exchange letters, but then we lost contact. But somehow, like, I think 2012 or around that time, we reunited.
Wow, that's amazing.
And then that made like Hong Kong different, and also 2019 was I showed in Hong Kong my art, and that very much became like, oh yeah, it's like I feel like, oh, I can be me here. Whereas before, I struggle with, like, say I'm an artist and I think my surrounding environment were just kind of like, what? Didn't really understand it. I didn't feel accepted. I didn't have that network that felt like I could be also performing what I needed to do. But then, so that was so difficult, which was less Hong Kong, more than my experience of it, which was more than my, I guess, why the families on the circle that created that environment, which I kind of struggled with. But then since 2019, I was like, I had the opportunity to go back quite often. And then, not 2019, I mean before that as well. And then I started to go, oh, okay, we can be friends. And then my Cantonese got better as well.
Mm-hmm.
By just watching Cantonese things and just keeping it up.
You feel like
you
have to chase that. Like, if I don't watch, then I'm losing my identity.
No, I think it just so happened, like, I met more people from Hong Kong, even in the UK, and then I started to, I don't know, I think when you know more people, your friends, people you connect with, really change a little for you, and your sense of, like, of the place, or your relationship with the place. And then, in 2019, the second half, like, everything gone a bit, with the whole movement, and the protests, and that came with lots of other things. So, like, I was surprised I cared a lot. It sounded weird. It sounds, I don't know when I phrased it right, but because I didn't really grow up there. It was somewhere I kind of
know about from a distance, but yet just watching what was happening, looking at like the streets that I was familiar with, where I walked before, and then what was going on, and I don't know, I realised it, Hong Kong meant more than I thought.
Mm.
And there's something about the birthplace or somewhere. Mm. Even like hearing Cantonese feels so warm to me.
Mm.
And I think, yeah, I think that's kind of when I realised, okay, it's more than that. Like, just more than... I don't feel like I know a lot about Hong Kong, like, compared, I would say, to the point... Because I didn't have those lived experience, but then... I think something about just seeing somewhere in chaos, or just in this, not chaos, is that the right word? I mean, just in...
Chaos.
In the chaos, yeah. Just not in a good way. You feel like, I emotionally, you know, I can feel it. Even some people I've spoken with who don't really have that much relationship will still just be watching online, like, what's happening, and will have that on the side. I'm always next to you and not really there.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know whether you feel similar.
I'd say I'm Canadian because I identify more in a Canadian valley than Hong Kong. But at the same time, I feel like it's both, but I couldn't, like you say, I couldn't claim that I'm from Hong Kong. Or Canadian either. Like, for a podcast, I have no idea what to talk about because I cannot. I'm not Canadian enough, I'm not Hong Kong enough, and yeah, so it was hard for me. So, yeah, completely.
Mm-hmm. It's still feeling not enough.
For me, attachment can be something too heavy to have. I don't know, like after 6 years, I feel like I'm lighter. I think it's like less cultural burden as well. And then it's also because my experience is different from the complete Hong Kong experience now. It feels like I can make something different from what they are making, like in terms of writing or like the experience, and therefore I can have something new or something less Hong Kong, which can be refreshing to people in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I can take a different position to bring something new to them. Yeah. And I think the attachment is quite crucial. Like, yeah, sometimes it's like I don't want to feel too strongly for Hong Kong because I lost the distance to look at that in a more subjective or subjective. Yeah.
I wonder whether that the cultural history or the master baptism is your true identity, your new nationality, your cultural capital is more reinforced towards to Asian than any other reason. Then suddenly kind of, oh, you know, I, we all get that a lot, you know, I really expect that I love kimchi. And it's the first, you know, general conversation I get. then the K-pop and, you know, all the representational aspects of Korea. So get to the point where I don't carry that much of authenticity anymore, and I am more living in the liminal space than either UK or Korean context. To get to that point, it takes a lot of dialogue and openness to say it. Otherwise, I can perform that cultural authenticity. And that's quite suffocating. And in a way, I think that's why I treasure this conversation, even though we're not asking for, do you have a Hong Kong experience? You know, we're actually saying that, or maybe there is a number of different kind of experience that doesn't have to be always tied up to the land. And maybe that's what John was talking about, that his sense of Hong Kong is not about the land, it's not about the geographical location, but himself. And his way of engaging with the Hong Kong culture is also a complex one. Not other people would share with his experience. So does yours, so does yours. Mm-hmm. Everybody's experience is different.
Maybe
it's
mine.
Yeah.
You can have a bit of okay. Yes.
Thank you.
So I'll
make mine.
Do you want some makgeolli?
Yeah, please.
You
want
to
drink
alcohol,
right?
Oh, that's
amazing.
That's like a farmer's drink. Maybe I should be an farmer. It's like the farmer's second breakfast. Because they start very early, like at 5, 6 a.m.
Wow.
So normally the wife brings second breakfast between lunch and
breakfast.
They always bring the makgeolli together because it fills up your stomach.
It goes nice with salad. You say it's supposed to have like some vegetables.
Yeah, some vegetables and also, yeah, also savory. So there are two bowls you can take. The
All right. These are the kids.
Yeah.
So good.
They're so good.
So sweet.
You like them like this?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh,
you even
brought
the spices.
Can we take
them? Oh, we'll take a picture.
Okay.
Selfie. Someone can take a selfie.
No, I'm not the one with the biggest face.
No.
That's okay. Okay, 1, 2, 3. It's really
nice. A long table of food. A year ago, the pandemic erupted in Europe. Departures become a regular occurrence as foreign residents left. Plane tickets were difficult to find. A friend studying in the UK spent 30,000 Hong Kong dollars for a one-way ticket back to Hong Kong the following week. Worried, he asked me, "Yin, are you leaving?" I told him I was not. The truth is, where was there for me to go? I was shocked by his question, as unnecessary as asking if a Hong Konger speaks Cantonese. Perhaps he saw me as someone like him, a sojourner here. But how could I be? Before you can make plans to leave, you have to have a home you can return to. I do not.
Tao tao nick say to people song Tsi si wu tin fai lo kuo Yu yang guang bun ngó Sam chung gan ming lang Zoi sai sai su seng Dan yu wu tin ya mong kin Yu yang guang bun ngó Sing sun siêu ying min Lan siêu pin ngó sam Tsi si mui tin fai lo kuo Yu yang guang bun ngó Sam chung gan ming lang Zoi sai sai su seng Dan yun mui tin